It's Sunday morning, time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio, and I hope you enjoy the show this morning very much. I'm going to start off with something that I sometimes do in sort of late winter, early spring, when the hard ice has become too soft to go and venture on it, and there's not much to do outside, and that is pick up old journals, or through the internet now, you're able to get a lot of things that you never could get before, and do some reading on sort of government statistics or stories of the past. So I want to start off this morning with a release from the Department of Interior dated January 21st, 1941. And the reason I'm going to talk about this is it goes under the category of you really can't believe everything you read. In 1941, there were no surveys of any kind that would even be remotely be reliable as to the number of birds that were present in North America, much less the number of ducks and geese that were present. The waterfowl survey did not begin until 1955, and it was rudimentary at best then. So in 1941, we really didn't have much. But let me just read you a release from the Department of Interior, which I thought was pretty interesting, and then I'll bring it home to today. First of all, it starts off, they are interviewing an individual by the name of Captain Theodore Johnson, who was one of only five or six old-time market hunters still alive in the Mississippi Delta region, and he was talking to a representative of the Fish and Wildlife Service about what it was like to be a market hunter. So in and of itself, that was pretty interesting. And he starts off by saying, I killed more than 1,000 waterfowl in 1 week, and I shipped the whole lot to New Orleans for about $2.40 a dozen, or 40 cents a pair. That was the largest number of ducks I ever bagged in 1 week. Then he went on to say that the old-time hunters, we were pretty good at it, and we killed and sold about 10,000 wild game birds each season between 1902 and 1911, and we were considered among the most successful market hunters in the bayous and swamps of the Mississippi Delta. So a individual market hunter a year was killing about 10,000 ducks. Now, there weren't very many market hunters, but that's an awful lot of birds. So then the release goes on to talk a little bit more about his background and how he hunted, and then it makes a rather astounding statement. The Fish and Wildlife Service, it wasn't the Fish and Wildlife Service, it was called the Department of Interior, said that in 1900, there were at least 150 million migratory waterfowl in North America, and that as the wildfowl began dwindling, that by 1934, there were less than 30 million wild ducks and geese on this continent. I stopped there, and I thought, as I'm now going to talk a little about this morning, how absurd. We had absolutely no idea, not a clue, how many ducks and geese there were on the continent in 1941. There had never been a survey. Yet the Fish and Wildlife Service, or the Department of Interior, as it was called then, excuse me, the Fish and Wildlife Service didn't exist, Department of Interior authority says that there were 130 million birds in 1900, and we were down to roughly 30 million birds by the 1930s. So looking at things today, we just had a report that came out that said we have lost 3 billion birds in North America over the last 50 years. When it came out a few weeks ago, it received wide distribution. And this is 2020. Our ability to determine whether we've lost 1 billion, 2 billion, 3 billion, or 20 billion birds in 2020 is not a whole lot better than our ability was in the 1930s to talk about how many birds there had been when the continent hadn't been settled yet, and how many birds there were then. So I, among many people, know that the statistics that come out of the Fish and Wildlife Service are estimates at best. And we shouldn't treat them as absolute. They are indices of things that are happening. Unfortunately, the people who report these things in the papers and in, well, there aren't many papers left, but who report these things over the internet or on the news, don't have the background, and they're not presented in a way that says, please treat this information as our best estimate, because we do not have an exact means to be able to say precisely what we have and what we have. It's our best estimate as to what the populations would have been and what they are now. But that's not what happens. Instead, they're printed as absolute. And just as in 1941, when the Department of Interior issued their statement saying we once had 150 million birds and then we got down to 30 million ducks and geese, the same is true in 2020 when we announced a great fanfare, we being all kinds of birding organizations, many very respected, that we've lost 3 billion birds in the last 50 years. We would be much better served if we said we are in a decline in the number of birds. The decline appears to be rapid, and it could be that we are headed to a point where a great number of bird species are not going to be doing very well. Rather than put a number on it, which cannot be substantiated. So when you read these releases that are put out by the federal government or the states or by conservation organizations, I think we should read them in the spirit of what they're intended rather than the absolute numbers that they are predicting. Because unless you're counting, as an individual was on my show last week, 312 sheep from a helicopter, he knows exactly how many sheep, bighorn sheep there were. When you're counting ducks and you're estimating tens of millions or hundreds of millions of birds, you can't be absolute. You might not even be close. But directionally, you know whether populations are going up or down. So as we move forward, and with communications being what it is, I really think it's incumbent upon the professional community to be accurate in the context, but not absolute in the numbers. Because the numbers are our best estimates. And the Fish and Wildlife Service and the entire outdoor community that reports numbers of bird species is trapped in this. And it would be much better for society and for managing birds if we focused on trends instead of absolute numbers. And as I said a moment ago, I don't know whether 3 billion birds have disappeared from North America in the last 50 years. Nobody knows whether they have. But what we know is that there are far fewer birds populating the North American continent today than there were 50 years ago. And we also know that there were far more birds 100 years ago than there were 50 years ago. So we have been on a trend line for a long time that is not good. The question really is that trend line accelerating? What species are stabilizing? And if there are species stabilizing, why are they doing better than others? In the waterfowl community, we certainly have certain species of waterfowl that are doing really, really well. And we have others that are continue to be in a free fall. And so we can take maybe lessons from those that are doing well and apply to those that aren't doing so well. Or we need to focus our efforts more on those that aren't doing well. So overall, the takeaway is, when you read statistics from the federal government when it comes to wildlife species, and I can't speak about other statistics, but when it comes to bird species, read them with some skepticism because they're not absolute. But understand very much that this is true. Bird populations across North America are disappearing. We are losing vast numbers of birds, and that is a very sad and also a very alarming trend for our continent because the birds are telling us something about what's taking place and their absence in the skies. We need to listen to them. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors Show. When I do, I want to talk a little bit about conservation funding and how it's being spent and where some of the issues are. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back in just a moment. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. This past week, the primary season certainly delivered some results that caused some individuals to leave the presidential field. What I want to talk about for a moment, perhaps with a bit of sarcasm, but also with reality behind it, is former Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York reportedly has spent over $500 million or $500 million trying to become the Democratic nominee for president. It's not important whether or not he was the dominant nominee or got in the race or got out of the race. That's not what I'm going to talk about. What I want to talk about is $500 million plus dollars and what that would mean if that particular candidate or anyone in this country with those kinds of financial resources really cared about the outdoors, outdoor recreation, and wildlife management. And I'm not talking in this context about an individual saying we have a climate crisis and the sky is falling. That's not what I'm talking about. There is money headed for climate change in huge ways. What I'm talking about is an individual, in this case, if Mayor Bloomberg had said, and he obviously has plenty of resources left, how about I spend $500 billion on wildlife management in America and fisheries management? I mean, $500 million. What would that do? So here are some thoughts. If we had $500 million to dump into wildlife management today, in a period of a few months, as was done in the presidential election by an individual, it would fund the North American Wetlands Conservation Act for the next 10 years. The North American Wetlands Conservation Act is the single most important piece of legislation and endeavor ongoing right now on the continent, a joint effort between Mexico, Canada, and the United States to save what is left of our remaining wetlands and our bird populations that depend on them. And at the top of the show, I talked a lot about some of the old historical records, and then I talked a little bit about statistics. This is real. The North American Wetlands Conservation Act struggles every year to get $50 million from the federal government for a plan that actually can save the remaining wetlands on the prairies and across the continent and stem the decline in bird populations. $500 million, instead of being dumped into a presidential campaign, could fund it for the next 10 years. Or $500 million could buy duck stamps. That would be the single best thing that anyone could do, is simply put $500 million in the federal duck stamp fund, because 98% of the money that goes into buying duck stamps must be used to acquire land or to acquire easements. Only 2 cents on every dollar can be used for administrative overhead. Can you only imagine what would happen if we suddenly had $500 million in the federal duck stamp account? We would be saving wetlands across all of North America. No, actually, it's only in the United States. We'd be saving wetlands across the United States. We would absolutely turn the tide on the decline in migratory bird populations. So $500 million, which is thrown around in political campaigns, if it were redirected, if individuals, if we could just find some individuals who'd say, I'll spend that kind of money to make the quality of life in America better from the point of view of managing our outdoor recreation resources, managing our forests, managing our wetlands, would just have a profound impact, particularly if that money was in the private sector. If those funds were provided to organizations in the private sector that are working as 501c3 not-for-profits who could work with the government to leverage those funds, it would be a magical thing. Instead, we are scraping at the bottom of the barrel, trying to get $1 million here, $500,000 there. The federal government and all the states right now are wringing their hands over the loss of revenues because Pittman-Robertson funds are declining. That's the excise tax on firearms and ammunition, and it's something the states have been depending on, and they boomed for the past basically 20 years, and now they're declining. States don't know what to do. Hunting and fishing licenses are declining. They provide revenues to the states. There's this big program, which I've talked about, and I certainly will continue to talk about, 3 R's, recruit, and retain and reactivate hunters. It's a program that's going absolutely nowhere. It is not a waste of money. I don't mean to say that, but it's not well focused. So the wildlife community at large is truly in trouble when it comes to managing our public lands, when it comes to providing resources for people to use our public lands, when it comes to being even able to manage species that are in decline, whether they are hunted or not. And yet there seems to be so much money awash in the political system in America. It is just astounding to me that we cannot find the kind of resources we need to manage things that provide a quality of life for all Americans that is so central to us. And maybe, you know, a lot of people listen to WGN. Maybe someone's listening this morning who says, geez, I got $500 million. I'd love to help conservation in America. I doubt that's going to happen. But that's the kind of impact that we could have for conservation in America with that amount of money. And it just seems in a few weeks that's spent on political campaigns, while the real world of people who every day want to enjoy our outdoor resources are watching the federal government just whittle away at the amount of money we have. And I said this before, in 1978, 4% of the federal budget went to conservation. That would be programs for soil and water, that quality. That would be programs for building fishing piers. That would be programs for acquiring wetlands. It would be programs for setting aside land for refuges. 4% of the federal budget. This year, less than 1% of the federal budget will go to conservation in America. It's still a big number, $25 billion or $26 billion, but it is not what it would have been if this was 1978. Which is why we have such an incredible backlog of maintenance, and which is why people, frankly, are leaving the fields of hunting and fishing, because it's very hard to find high-quality places to go. So in a way, which is a vicious circle, we get less money, we have less money to manage our wildlife, we have less money to acquire habitat, we have less money to do good science, and we're just circling the drain here, because there are going to be fewer of us going forward, we're going to have fewer resources. And we need to recognize that this is only going to be reversed if someone decides they have a huge interest and wants to help, or if a collection forces the general public, the people who control our purse strings, to begin to prioritize the lack of resources going into conservation. So I'll end the show kind of where I began. Statistics are not always what they claim to be. The accuracy we have with them, it has a wide range of, has a pretty big variable when it comes to measuring fish and wildlife in this country. But the one statistic we do know is true: far fewer people are hunting and fishing than was true 25 years ago. And that is going to create not only a financial crisis, it's going to also create a political crisis, as we will not have the kind of support we historically have had. Thanks so much for listening to The Great Outdoors Show. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more on The Great Outdoors. Hope you've enjoyed it. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.